Approximately 2 years ago, I brought a message from the text of Isaiah 51, verses 1 and 2. And I want to begin today's message by going back to that same text. If you would with me, turn to Isaiah chapter 51. Isaiah 51 and verses 1 and 2, it says, "Listen to me, you who pursue righteousness, who seek Yahweh. Look to the rock from which you were hewn, and to the quarry from which you were dug. Look to Abraham your father, and to Sarah who gave birth to you in pain. When he was one, I called him, then I blessed him and multiplied him." In that message 2 years ago, I mentioned that Abraham very clearly in this passage is set up for us by God as an example. But I failed to point out 2 years ago in that very same message that Sarah as well is set up as an example for us as well. So I'm here today. I want you to know that I'm coming before you today this morning repenting of my gross negligence and oversight in that message 2 years ago, and my sin, if you even prefer to call it that. I'm here to repent of that, and I hope that the Christian ladies of the remnant of Israel will find it in their hearts to forgive me. After all, it was a Father's Day message that I used that text in approximately 2 years ago. Well, today it's Mother's Day, and I've decided to bring the flip side of that message I preached 2 years ago. That message was entitled Father Abraham. Today's message will entitle Mother Abraham, and as I mentioned as I led songs this morning, if I could have found a song entitled Faith of Our Mothers from the songbook, we would have sung that this morning. Instead, we had to sing Faith of Our Fathers. So you'll have to forgive whoever wrote those songs too, I guess. Anyway, today's message is entitled Mother Sarah. Not only is Abraham clearly set up as an example for us to look to and follow for the fathers and men of this day and age, but Sarah as well is set up as a great example for the women and mothers of today. And how I wish that more Israelite women, more mothers today would look to her as their example, as their pattern, as their model, their standard, and even their inspiration. How I wish that our women would look to Sarah, as we've been told to do in that very passage we read as the text for this message. You know, the men of today's society certainly have what I believe is a tremendous shortage when it comes to true men, to heroes from which to look to and pattern their lives after. You know, anybody that has, I believe, eyes to see and to see what's going on around us in this world, especially if you watch any amount of TV at all, I think you've got to admit that that's true. There's a shortage of true heroes for our men and our boys today. But I'm convinced that it's even worse for our women and our girls today. You know, just how many women in today's society can you think of that are shining examples of what a woman should truly be? How many can you think of? You know, I'll be surprised that if you can fill one handful of fingers with good examples, good patterns and models for our women to follow today. It'll surprise me. Let's see. We have, let's see if I can't come up with some. Let's see. We have former vice president candidate Geraldine Ferraro. We have Colorado Congressman Pat Schroeder. We have founder of NOW, the NOW organization, the National Organization of Women, Betty Friedan. We have the NOW president, Molly Yard. Let's see, I'm not keeping up with my fingers here. Five, we have Cosmopolitan editor Helen Gurley Brown. Let's see, we also have the leader of the birth control movement and the inspiration for Planned Parenthood, Margaret Sanger. And we also have the leader of the Women's Lib movement, Gloria Steinem. You know, aren't these the women, or at least the type of women, that are primarily being held up as the ideal woman for the 20th century? Aren't those the women that are our young girls, for the most part, in this country, are being pointed to say, there's what the ideal woman of the 20th century is, or even the 21st century as we're nearing it? You know, what great choices! Well, let me tell you something, and that is that if these women are what you have to pick from, in today's society, excuse my English, but you ain't got nothing. And that's just about what I consider that type of woman, or that the type of woman that those women represent. And in some cases, and some people may not like this, but sometimes you can hardly consider them women, or at least ladies, for the most part. But you know, all is not hopeless, ladies, because you do have at least one great godly example to model your lives after. At least one. Isaiah 51, verses 1 and 2, listen to it again, says, "Listen to me, you who pursue righteousness, who seek Yahweh. Look to the rock from which you were hewn, and the quarry from which you were dug. Look to Abraham your father, and to Sarah who gave birth to you in pain." According to God, Sarah is someone you can look to model your life after. The Bible also admonishes us in Titus chapter 2 and verses 3 and 4 for the older women to teach or train the younger women. You know, as Sarah is generations older than the women of today's generation, one could say that Sarah is to be a teacher of today's generation of women. And oh, how desperately the women of today's generation need the kind of example or the kind of teacher that Sarah can be. So let me ask you, what can Sarah teach the women of today? What can she teach? I mean, really, what could such an archaic, Puritan, old-fashioned, submissive, loving, selfless wife and mother of the B.C. era teach a modern, liberated, independent, self-sufficient, equality-minded, self-centered, uppity, excuse me, mom, bra-burning, anti-Puritan woman of the 90s. You know, need I say more? You know, that just about says it all. But being as the tape that this is being recorded on is 60 minutes long, and being as I'm a preacher, and being as the point needs to be driven home, I'm going to preach on. What are the qualities that God saw in Sarah that He set her up as an example for the women for all generations to come in the future? Well, let me begin by first making this clear, and that is that Sarah wasn't perfect. There's really not a whole lot that's really even said about Sarah in the Scriptures. She's really not dealt with all that much, even though she was set up by God as an example. There's not a whole lot said about Sarah. Matter of fact, in the Old Testament, what do you remember about Sarah? Other than the fact that she was Abraham's wife and she was the mother of Isaac. What else do you recall about Sarah in the Old Testament? You remember her lack of faith. That's what you remember about Sarah from the Old Testament. Turn with me, if you would, to Genesis chapter 18. Genesis chapter 18, starting with verse 9. Now this is the story, or the setting for this passage, is the story of when the three came to Abraham. And one that was obviously not just an angel, but instead was probably the incarnate Son of God at that time, at that era, in the form that He came. Verse 9 it says, "And they said to him, 'Where is Sarah your wife?' And he said, 'Behold, in the tent.' And he said, 'I will surely return to you at this time next year, and behold, Sarah your wife shall have a son.' And Sarah was listening at the tent door, which was behind him. Now Abraham and Sarah were old, advanced in age. Sarah was past childbearing. And Sarah laughed to herself and said, 'After I have become old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also?' And Yahweh said to Abraham, 'Why did Sarah laugh, saying, "Shall I indeed bear a child when I am so old? Is anything too difficult for Yahweh? At the appointed time, I will return to you. At the same time next year, shall Sarah have a son?'" Verse 15, it says, Sarah denied. Not only did she laugh, not only did she not have the faith that you would have expected from her, after God, now that we know that God has set her up as an example. But not only did she do all that, but she even lied. It says that Sarah denied it, however, saying, "I did not laugh, for she was afraid." And he said, "No, but you did laugh." You know, that's really, other than the fact that we know that Sarah was the wife of Abraham, other than the fact that we know that Sarah was the mother of Isaac, that is virtually the only thing that is said about Sarah herself in the whole entire Old Testament. She certainly was not perfect. You know, you look at just that and you say, well, that's not very much of a memorial, is it? To be known for what's described in that particular passage. And yet, as we will see later, by God's grace, thank goodness, she didn't have to be perfect in order to be used by God. You know, in spite of her lack of faith, God still used her to bring forth Isaac, who fathered Jacob Israel, who fathered the 12 patriarchs of the Israelite nation, and who in essence fathered you and I. He still used her in spite of the fact she wasn't perfect. And she scoffed at the idea of it ever being possible. You know, no, she wasn't perfect. And ladies, neither do you need to be perfect in order for God to use you too. Thank goodness, huh? Thank goodness I don't have to be perfect in order for God to use me, because we certainly know I'm not. And don't say your amens too loudly there. But thank goodness that God can use imperfect people, and that He chose Sarah and He used her as an example for you to be able to emulate and to do great things through. Things that not only normally we think of Sarah and we only think of what happened back then, and I mean that was something big. Here was a woman who was 99 past the age of childbearing, whose womb had dried up, and yet God restored it and brought forth Isaac. But the result of that has carried on from generations to generations to this very new covenant that we live in today, 2,000 years into it. To put it all together, understand that God specifically chose the Israelite nations, the house of Israel and the house of Judah, according to Hebrews 8:8, to make His new covenant with. You see, it's what He did with Sarah, because of who Sarah was, has lasted through the centuries. Maybe not quite in the same magnitude as what happened just a little over, or not quite, 2,000 years ago when He chose another woman called Mary. But almost with as big as impact as what was found as a result of Him choosing that lady. It is still having an impact on this country, and she wasn't perfect, but God still used her. So, granted, Sarah was not perfect, but what can be found in her life to make her the suitable candidate for God to set up as an example worth imitating? What can we find in her life? And again, I've already admitted that there's very little said about her. So can we find anything in her life that women can emulate today? Well, do you know what was the very first thing that came to my mind about Sarah when I started preparing this message? The very first thing that I felt, hey, here is something that can be imitated in this lady's life that God, I believe, set her up for as an example. You know what it was? You got any ideas what it might have been? I don't think you'll come up with what I came up with initially. First of all, she was a wife. Now that, in generations past, it would probably have seemed rather odd for a preacher or a prophet to have gotten up before a congregation of people and to have used wifehood itself as a quality that God chose in someone to emulate. The reason that was a normal goal or desire of every young girl. When virginity was a virtue highly esteemed and to be preserved for your husband. But contrast that with what Gloria Steinem, head of one of the leaders of the Women's Live movement, Contrast what we know was the case back in generations and centuries past. Contrast that with what Gloria Steinem had at one time had to say. She said, quote, "A liberated woman is one who has sex before marriage and a job after," end quote. You know how different the mindset is of today's women, not all, but for the biggest majority anymore, of today's women in comparison to where the women were and their mindset in times past. In today's society of Madonnas, of easy women, whoring and sleeping around, or worse yet, a society with an ever-increasing number of lesbian sodomites, being a wife certainly is a quality that's much to be admired. You know, back then, it was just taken for granted. But in today's society, it's something to be admired and praised and lifted up. And not only admired, but being a wife is where a woman will find her greatest fulfillment. Now, that's going to make me real popular, isn't it, with the women liberals of today. But that's the truth. That's where a woman will find her greatest fulfillment. And let me stipulate this as a part of that. That is, if she will fulfill what God has in mind for her as a wife. That is where a woman will find her greatest fulfillment. And I know there's going to be some that will say, you know, how in the world could you say such a thing? Especially in this day and era, in this modern day and age. How could you say such a thing, preacher, that a woman is only going to find her greatest fulfillment in being a wife? Well, I can say it very easily and very emphatically. The reason being is because God's primary purpose in creating women was for them to be wives. Not His only purpose, but His primary purpose. For women, they were created in order to be wives. Turn with me to 1 Corinthians 11 and verses 8 through 9. And I know for any of you women liberals out there in the audience that you're going to recognize that I'm going to the Apostle Paul, the male chauvinist pig of all times, as they sometimes call him. But nonetheless, let's realize, whatever you want to call him, that Paul was inspired by the Holy Spirit of God in what he wrote. 1 Corinthians chapter 11. In verses 8 and 9, listen to what it says. And again, I'm not the one that's even saying this. It's from God. He's the one who said it. Verses 8 and 9, it says, "For man does not originate from woman, but woman from man." Verse 9, "For indeed man was not created for woman's sake, but woman for man's sake." Now, just so that doesn't get twisted and misunderstood by someone, that doesn't mean that woman was created to be a doormat for man. We know that's not the case. God's purpose for woman has always highly elevated her, both Old Testament, by the way, and New Testament alike. You know, there's a lot of these New Testament Christians running around says that the New Testament is what liberated the woman. God's plan for the woman has always been the same. Whatever His plan was, whatever His plan is in the New Testament for women, it's the same in the Old Testament. It hasn't changed. Our God doesn't change. God has always highly elevated woman, but that doesn't change the fact that God created the woman for man. Go back to Genesis chapter 2 and verse 18. It's very clear there. It says, "Then Yahweh God said, it is not good for man to be alone. I will make him a helper," or help meet, according to King James, "suitable for him. I'm making her," Eve, "for Adam." And thus it was the same on through from then on. Ladies, and even as I say this, I guess I can't even use the word ladies for the ones I'm actually addressing in this. So I'll use women. So women, if you want to be miserable and you want to make everybody else miserable around you, just reject God's plan for your life. And that doesn't mean that every woman is going to get married. Obviously, that's not the case. And not that they can't find fulfillment. But again, God's purpose is very clear, that the woman, for those who can be married, should be married and should do it the way that God's designed it to be. But if you want to be miserable and you want to make everybody else miserable around you, just reject God's plan for your life and instead follow the advice of Margaret Sanger, where she, in speaking to women in general, she said, quote, "Her mission, the woman's, her mission is not to enhance the masculine, but to express the feminine," end quote. Well, I say that a woman certainly should express her feminine, But it is to do it so to enhance the masculine. Men, let me ask you, do we need enhanced at times? Kind of rough on the edges, aren't we? Sometimes we need to be enhanced. How opposite we see Margaret Sanger's advice than the advice that comes from God's holy word. You know, Sarah, by example, was first a wife. And in so being, she was something for this generation of women to follow. Secondly, she was a mother. In today's society, of course, motherhood has almost become a curse word. You know, to the modern successful, quote-unquote, successful woman of today. You ever wonder why so many women of today don't want to be mothers? Have you ever thought about why they don't? And that's becoming more and more and more prevalent as each generation goes by, as we become more... Have you ever thought about why are there so many women who don't want to become mothers? I believe a lot of it goes to the fact that they're being brainwashed and... can't say the word, but through the propaganda of this modern era, you know, I believe that's part of it. But why, for each particular case, why is it, no matter the reasons behind it, why is it that there are so many women today who don't want to become mothers? Well, I can sum it up for you in two words. They're selfish. Oh, you know, giving birth is so past, there's so much pain to it. You know, it's just too much work in today's society to have children. Do you know how much it costs to raise a child in today's society? Why, we'd have to give up the finer things in life to have children. You know, I have my career to think of. You know, I enjoy peace and quiet far too much to have children. You know, if you think about it, motherhood really uses up the best years of one's life. And you don't think I'm going to sacrifice my figure to have children, do you? Selfishness. Plain old selfishness. There's no question about it. You know, women today, or we see women today, more and more today, we see that motherhood is looked upon as being simply a vice or a deterrent to life, rather than a quality or a virtue. But just think of the qualities. Think of the qualities a woman must possess in order to be a good mother. Now, motherhood is just a vice or a deterrent. No, but think. I mean, that cannot make sense if you think about the qualities it takes for a woman to be not just any mother, but a good mother. Think about the qualities. She must possess or achieve extreme unselfishness. It reminds me of the story of a school teacher who was given a lesson in fractions. She asked one little boy, she said, "Johnny, suppose that there were seven in your family, your father and your mother and five children, and your mother baked a pie and you were going to get one piece of it. What fraction of the pie would you be getting?" And Johnny said, "Well, I'd be getting a sixth of the pie." And the teacher responded, "No, you don't understand, Johnny. Don't you understand fractions?" And Johnny said, "Yes, I understand fractions, and I understand mothers, and my mother would say she doesn't want a piece." You know, that is a description of mothers. At least I know it is the description of the mother of my children and the grandmother of my wife, or the mother of my wife, sorry. That's their description, and I think it's the description of pretty much women across the globe. You know, Johnny understood how sacrificing and unselfish his mother really was, how sacrificing and unselfish mothers in general really are. She must also possess a never-ending love. And that reminds me of the scoutmaster who discovered inside the sleeping bag of one of his scouts an umbrella. And he looked at the young scout and he said, "Why in the world did you bring an umbrella on a camping trip?" And the young scout looked at his scout master rather sheepishly, and he said, "Sir, didn't you ever have a mother?" You know, their love and their concern never ends, even for the poor kid that's got to go out on a camping trip with his umbrella. You know, it never ends. And that's really a poor example of a mother's love. That doesn't even begin to skim the surface of how much a mother loves her children. That beautiful quality that she must possess to be a good mother. And then, of course, she must have never-ending patience and endurance beyond measure. You know, once a woman called her daughter in another state, and this particular daughter had a particularly bad day with her two sons, who was at that time 9 months and 3 years old. She called her up and she said, "Well, how are you doing?" And she says, "Well, Mom, I really don't know. You know, sometimes I hope I'm just the babysitter and the parents are coming home soon." You know, and how that is sometimes with mothers. You know, what they have to put up with, the continual day by day, especially for mothers who, of course, stay at home for the benefit of their children, and have to put up with the day in and day out haranguing and everything else that comes with a child and their never-ending questions. I'm sure that there's been more than one mother who says, "I wish I was just the babysitter instead of the mother." And yet she'd never trade places. She'd never give it up. And she learns to develop, if she doesn't already have it, a never-ending patience and endurance beyond measure. And then, of course, she must be gentle. She must be kind. She must always have an ear that's willing to listen to the never-ending questions that children raise. And then I think maybe one of the most important qualities a good mother has or must have is a good sense of humor, to be able to handle all of the rest of it. Now, and that's not to mention, by the way, that she must also be a nursemaid, a cook, a housekeeper, a dietitian, a chauffeur, a teacher, a seamstress, an interior decorator, a hygienist, a psychologist, a referee, and a host of other things that could be named as well. You know, a good mother, in essence, summed up, gives her life so that others might live. You know, I can look at, I'm glad my mother's here, my mother-in-law is here as an example. You know, I can't think of a better example of somebody who gives. And my father-in-law as well. A man couldn't have better in-laws than I have. And I'm glad they're here to hear that. They are the most giving, sacrificial people I've ever run across in my life. And thankfully, they raised my wife, because she's much the same. And what did Joshua say about that? You know, a good mother, according to John 15:13, fits that description, the description that Christ himself gave, when he said, "Greater love has no one than this, than that one lay down his life for his friends or / children." There's no greater love than that. And that's what a mother is, when you sum up all the qualities that has to be found in good mothers. You know, a good mother possesses the greatest qualities of life. And how could anyone look upon motherhood as being anything less than one of the greatest callings in life? And I tell you what, in today's generation, in this modern, accelerated generation, as it's so often called, I don't call it that. I believe we're more backward than we've been in who knows how long. We've gotten so far away from God's ideals and His plan of perfection. But in today's society, when so many look at it completely backwards, when, as Isaiah said, they call evil good and good evil, it's difficult for a mother to be able to look at herself with any self-esteem, because everybody's putting her down. But she needs to understand, and I hope that every mother who will hear this either now or in the tape to come, the tape that will be sent out, that they will understand that they, in order to be a mother, to be a good mother, possess the greatest qualities of life. And how that could ever be looked down upon is beyond me. I certainly don't. Thirdly, hand in hand with being a mother, this is probably not one that will be addressed in very many pulpits across this nation today, because again, because of our backwardness, because we've gotten so far away as a people from God's standard of things. But hand in hand with being a mother, Sarah, as an example, was one whom we can look to as being one through whom her race was perpetuated. You know, a good mother is one whom is not only interested in her children, but who is concerned with her children's children's children. That's a great mother. You know, contrast that with the attitude which is becoming, I really believe, more and more prevalent in today's society, especially when you see these Winnebagos going down the highways with the bumper sticker on the back, "I'm spending my children's inheritance." You know, not that I look to getting any inheritance at all. I couldn't care less if I got a dime from my parents. But the attitude that's behind it, that goes down the road and says, "I don't care about my children. I'm spending their inheritance. They can make it on their own. And they probably will anyway." But the attitude that goes with that, contrast the attitude that I believe Sarah had with the attitude of today's society. Here's a letter, for example, that was written to Dear Abby. And I'm going to exclude her advice because I don't think her advice is normally very good. But here's the letter that was written to her, and again, I believe it demonstrates fairly well what's becoming more prevalent throughout our society with our people. "Dear Abby, after experimenting with parenthood for almost 40 years, I don't know how anyone experiments with parenthood to begin with. This person probably did. "After experimenting with parenthood for almost 40 years, I have come to the conclusion that children are a sexually transmitted disease, with an incubation period of about 15 years, at which time they become acute cephalgia, parentheses, headache, a cervical strain, parentheses, pain in the neck, and a maximal pain in the gluteus maximus, parentheses, rear end. And like herpes, they can be forever." You know, I'm sure a lot of people read that and really thought that that was very humorous. But how sick our minds have become, because that isn't so far-fetched from the way many adults look upon children today. The greatest blessings a man and woman could ever have. You know, that's not too far removed from even modern Christianity's attitude as well today. I hate to admit it, but what I'm going to share with you next came from the back of a church newsletter of a church I used to be an evangelist with. It's called the 21 Beatitudes for Parents. And the number one quote-unquote beatitude that was listed of the 21 is this, quote, "Blessed are the parents who know when to say no." You think, well, that sounds okay. But listen to the rest of it. "For they shall not learn firsthand the progenitive powers of a pair of white field mice," end quote. You know, in other words, don't have children. That was from the Christian perspective, or at least don't have very, you know, one's enough, two's plenty, and certainly don't have any more than that. In today's world, you're fortunate to find very many women who are interested in children at all. At least that's becoming more and more prevalent. And it's rare yet to find women who have any thought at all for their children's children, let alone women who have any concern for the perpetuation of their race. The white race, that is. You see, for the other races, it's not quite the problem it is for the white race. And again, I believe that's because of the way we've been brainwashed and because of the propaganda that comes across the boob tube day in and day out, and through the movie theaters like Dances with Wolves and other movies such as that are used to try to destroy the white race. Race, of course, for many has become a dirty word, at least to most white women. You know, how many white women become burdened about extinction? And by the way, statisticians are telling us right now that it's not so far in the distant future that if the white race continues to do as they're doing today, that they will meet, for all purposes, will come to an extinction point. We are headed that way right now. Now, how many white women become burdened about extinction? Well, you say hardly any of them. But that's a lie. That's not true at all. You see, multitudes, as a matter of fact, you'll find that it is primarily white women who make up societies or the societies concerned about extinction. The extinction of whales, the extinction of owls in the Northwest Forest, the extinction of white seals in Alaska, the extinction of crabs and small fish, the extinction of elephants in Africa and India, the extinction of coyotes and other fur bearers. They get all excited about extinction. But it is the same white women who have nearly no concern for the extinction of their own race. As a matter of fact, it's usually the same women, the very same women who are so involved in all these other societies, who are lining up at the infanticide mills. And that's right, I said infanticide mills. Let's start calling it what it really is. You cannot, you can't murder and abort. You can't aborticide anything. That's an action. It's the infant that's killed. You know, and I really believe that had we got that term right in the first place, that Roe versus Wade could have never passed. Had they called it, I believe it was dialectical maneuvering on the part of the enemies of Christianity and righteousness that labeled it as abortion. It's not abortion at all. It's infanticide. Infanticide is the murder of children. Had it been labeled that, you know Roe versus Wade could have never passed. But instead it was called aborticide, and it doesn't sound near as bad. Just like instead of calling it a baby or an infant in the mother's womb, you call it a fetus. You know, it doesn't seem near as bad to get rid of a fetus, but get rid of a baby, it's a different story. But the point, I'm off point with that. The point is that it's the very same women who are so concerned about all these other creatures that are lining up the outside of the infanticide mills to kill their babies and to see their race, or help in seeing their race, become extinct. You know, I would to God that we had some white women as concerned about their race as some of the black women are about theirs. Black women like, what's her name? I think it's Sister Sojin. You know, I applaud her. I don't know if you've seen her on any of the talk shows lately. She's kind of become a popular figure in the talk shows. I applaud that lady. I applaud her for her pro-Negro stance. Now, granted, she may not have much good to say about the white race, about us. But at least she's intensely concerned about her own race. And don't be fooled to think that you can't, that in order to be pro your race, you have to be against all of the races, like this woman happens to be, or at least appears to be. You don't have to be at all. You know, the people who are pro-segregationists instead of pro-integration are people who are for the races. They say, hey, you start mixing the races, and before long, you don't have any races at all. They've mixed to the point where they've become just one amalgamated race. And you don't have each individual distinct race as God created them to be. And yet, of course, the media wants to label it quite the opposite. We've been brainwashed to think that if you're pro your race, you're against or for the extermination of all the races, and it's not the case at all. Not that there may not be people out there like that. But I'm for the way that God created it originally to be. One race here, one race here, one race here. Because through that, each race can perpetuate itself. And as God created all that He created, He said it was good. So don't think that when you're pro one race, you're against all the other races. I wish that we have, and it's the white race, the white women, since I'm addressing this message to women and mothers, it's the white women who have been brainwashed to think that they can't be for their own race. You know, how terrible a thought, how terrible a position to be in when you can't be pro what God made you to be. I applaud those of the other races who are for their race. And I believe that they even stand as examples sometimes for our own women. And you can bet on it that Sarah was too. Now think about this. Now we normally would see this as something terrible that was also a part of Sarah's life. But she was so much for her race, the perpetuation of her race, She was so much so, being old and barren, that she went to the extreme of giving her handmaid to Abraham in order to continue the race through her, since she couldn't bear children herself. And don't be misled to think that Hagar was of a different race, as so often is taught today, because today's Arabs are so dark. And we know that the Arabs are the descendants through Ishmael. Don't think that she was a different race. We know that Abraham and Sarah would have never allowed such a thing, never would have considered such a thing as another, the woman of another race, to perpetuate their family or their children. It just could not have been originally. As I pointed out in previous messages, originally the Arabs were a white race, and they're only dark. Matter of fact, the Ishmaelites, if you want to call them that, have been lost. Why? Because of integration and interracial marriage. They are now a race of a color that's neither white nor black because of their interracial marriage. But of course, Sarah's name was, in this whole story, was changed from Sarai to Sarah, and it was she who became the mother of a multitude of nations. You know, what an admirable quality to emulate. And so I say, let Sarah be an example to the other white women of today that it's okay to be concerned about your own race, and that it's not hatred nor bigotry at all. That it's an admirable quality that Sarah obviously had. And by the way, just in case you maybe wonder whether Sarah was white or not, here's something new that I've just recently had come across my desk. Listen to this translated from the 7th Dead Sea Scroll, talking about Sarah. It says, her skin was pure white, she had long and lovely hair, her limbs were smooth and rounded, and her thighs were shapely. She had slender legs and small feet. Her hands were slim and long, and so were her fingers. End quote. A description of Sarah. She was certainly white. She was certainly one of the progenitors of our people. Fourthly, Sarah was a woman of great faith. Now, that may seem odd after having read Genesis 18 to you, where she scoffed at the thought of bearing children at the age of 99. But, well, first, think about this. Put yourself in her place. Don't you think that you might have had some doubts as well? Now, men, I'm not talking to you. You don't have to answer this one. Women, don't you think you'd have had some doubts at that point in time? So put yourself in her place first. And consider this also, that there are only 15 Israelites mentioned by name in Hebrews 11. Only 15, that great hall of faith chapter. The great, where we find all the great hall of famers in God's hall of fame. There's only 15 Israelites by name mentioned in that chapter, out of the millions who existed at the same time. And Sarah is one of them. Turn with me to Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11 and verses 11 and 12. Listen to what it says. It says, by faith, even Sarah herself received ability to conceive, even beyond the proper time of life, since she considered him faithful who had promised. Therefore also there was born of one man, and him as good as dead at that, as many descendants as the stars of heaven in number, and innumerable as the sand which is by the seashore. She's one of those 15 mentioned in Hebrews chapter 11. I don't know about you, but I find great encouragement in the fact that both Abraham and Sarah, and by the way, I might mention this too, ladies, I don't want you to think that Sarah was all that bad. Abraham, actually, and it might have been even years before, laughed at the idea first. So he wasn't perfect in his faith either. And I don't know about you, but I find great encouragement that both Abraham and Sarah are both listed in the great faith chapter found in the New Testament book of Hebrews, that God didn't require from them perfect faith, that he did not take note of their unbelief, but he regarded the faith that they did have. Now, don't misunderstand me either. I believe sometimes our faith is sometimes nothing in this day and age compared to what they did have. But the point is, it wasn't perfect faith. They did have their belief. It's like the man who came to Christ, I believe, in relation to the healing of his son, and he said, do you believe? And he says, yes, I do, but help me in my unbelief. And Christ recognized, regarded the faith of the man, what faith he did have, and he healed his son. And I'm thankful that there's those kinds of examples. I'm thankful that we have a book of faith that doesn't hide the infirmities and the problems and the other areas that would be looked down upon from those heroes that we have in the Bible. Because if it didn't share those as well, we'd look at ourselves and we would shrink in comparison. But I can look to Abraham and you can look to Sarah and you can say, hey, they weren't perfect and God still used them. Still record their name in that great faith chapter. He didn't require perfect faith. You know, and if ever there was a day and age when women of faith were needed, it's now. I believe that things are escalating in this day and age. Anybody who's been around for any length of time, if they'll maybe not look at yesterday, but if they'll look at the yesterdays of yesterdays, if they'll compare not today with yesterday, but if they'll compare today with years ago, especially anyone who's been around for many years, and compare what's going on in this world around us, what's going on specifically in America, things are escalating. You know, they're now beginning, as of the last couple of years, they're now beginning to talk about things in the open that they only spoke about behind closed doors or in patriot circles that understood and got a hold of some of the information along the way. You know, everybody used to think we were crazy when patriots in the past spoke of the new world order that was being planned. And now all of a sudden, the new world order is out front. I tell you, it's only out front, it's only being spoken of as verbally as it is, because things are escalating. They have plans, and that's just one illustration out of many that could be used to illustrate the times that we're in. And for that reason, if there was ever a day and age that we need women of faith, we need faith at all. But if we need women of faith, it's this day and age now. We need women who will follow the lead of Sarah, who will believe in their God, even when it appears there are insurmountable odds against them. Now, I believe, and I'm pointing this at the women not only because it's Mother's Day, but I'm pointing this particular part of this message at women today because I believe, I truly believe this, that faith comes harder for women than it does men. And I know that someone's going to question that. Because today's Judeo-Christian churches have more women in them than they do men. But I am convinced also that the faith being preached for the most part in the modern churches today is not true faith. For the most part, I believe it's just simply emotionalism. Often requiring only mental allegiance. And women, having been created as more emotional beings, I don't think anyone will deny that, and that's not a detriment. God made them that way because us men, as men, we need some of that. But being at the fact that they were created as more emotional beings, they're attracted to emotionalism. And I believe our churches, for the most part today, are filled with emotionalism. Maybe not all in the same extreme. I think you'll find it more in the charismatic churches than you will anywhere else. But nonetheless, the modern churches of the day, if you compare them with what we find as examples in the Scriptures of God's people of faith and God's examples of faith and what the church exhibited in the past, there's a wide variance of difference between the two. And I don't believe for the most part, I'm not saying totally, but for the most part what you find in most modern churches that you don't find what's really true faith. Men, on the other hand, in contrast to women, are, there's going to be some of you who won't like this, but are more practical and, let me add to that, more adventurous. And I don't think you'll probably disagree with that. And true biblical faith is practical, requiring action on our part, which often leads to quote-unquote adventure, if you know what I mean, especially in this day and age, or in days past. You look at the faith of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. It wasn't an emotional faith, not that there may not have been emotions involved with it,
as a result. But it wasn't their emotions. If anything, were saying, bow to that dumb idol. That's what their emotions were telling them. But their faith was practical. They said, I don't care what my emotions say. I'm not bowing to any idol, Nebuchadnezzar. You can burn me if you have to. See, there was some adventure involved in their practical faith and their obedience to their practical faith. And I believe we don't find much of that in today's churches today, for the most part. There's a remnant that's coming out and saying, hey, I'm going to stand on what's right no matter the cost. And I really believe that is more difficult for women than it is men. For many reasons, because they are more emotional creatures. Because of them, especially when they're mothers and there's children involved, that it's difficult for them to take that strong stand sometimes of faith and to carry it through. So today we need women. I believe Sarah was one of those women, though, who was able to go forward with the biblical faith that brought about action. You know, in light of all that, I really believe that women are, again, going to find it harder to perform or to find true faith, that they're going to find it more difficult, but not unobtainable. You know, out of the 15 people named in Hebrews 11, only one was a woman, and it was Sarah. And so she must have been a woman of extraordinary faith, and one that should be a great example of faith for our women today, no matter what they may face. And by the way, there's no such thing to God as insurmountable odds. You know, our faith, when we think that we're facing insurmountable odds, who are we kidding? Only ourselves. We're certainly not kidding God. To God, there are no insurmountable odds. You know, what did he tell Sarah when she laughed? He responded by asking her the rhetorical question, is anything too difficult for Yahweh? Jeremiah knew the answer to that question. We need to quickly, I'm running out of time, but we need to quickly turn to Jeremiah 32. Or you just listen, I'm already there. You listen to it as I read it to you. Jeremiah 32, verses 17 and 18. Listen to what Jeremiah said. He said, Ah, Lord Yahweh, behold, thou hast made the heavens and the earth by thy great power and by thine outstretched arm. Nothing is too difficult for thee. God, you created everything. How could anything be so difficult for you? Verse 18, who showest loving kindness to thousands, but repayeth the iniquity of fathers into the bosoms of their children after them. O great and mighty God, Yahweh of hosts is his name. You know, Jeremiah understood, hey, if he created everything else, there's certainly nothing that's too difficult for him. You know, we have got to get it into our heads, and especially you women in this day and age, that God is the insurmountable odd. And he's on our side if we belong to Christ. In actuality, there is virtually very little that's said about Sarah in the Scriptures. She's actually only mentioned in 31 verses in the entire Bible. And it's in the very last verse, the very last reference to her, that the most is said. Turn with me to 1 Peter chapter 3. And we'll quickly close this down. 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 1 through 6. It says, in the same way, you wives, be submissive to your own husbands, so that even if any of them are disobedient to the word, they may be won without a word by the behavior of their wives, as they observe your chaste and respectful behavior. And let not your adornment be merely external, braiding the hair and wearing gold jewelry and putting on dresses, but let it be the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God. For in this way, in former times, the holy women also, who hoped in God, used to adorn themselves, being submissive to their own husbands. Thus Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, and you have become her children if you do what is right without being frightened by any fear. Now herein, in this passage, we find six qualities which Sarah possessed, in which women today can and should emulate. She was submissive. She was chaste. She was respectful. She possessed inward beauty and a gentle and quiet spirit. Now, let's do this. Let's take any of the seven women that I mentioned at the very beginning of this message and Let's ask ourselves, would we describe any of those women who are being lauded and held up in many cases as examples for the women of the 20th and 21st centuries? Would you describe any of those ladies with the qualities here given to Sarah? Now, instead of trying to think of all of them, maybe just pick one or two of them and think about it. Maybe ones that you'd know a little bit more about. How about some either Molly Yard, if you know her, or how about Pat Schroeder? She seems to be getting the news a whole lot more here recently. And having been to Colorado, I'm a little bit more familiar with her. Now, think about those ladies. Rather than submissiveness being a description of them, I think you'd probably see them as being more rebellious. Rather than, and by the way, you know, certain women are called witches or worse. In 1 Samuel 15:23, God made it very clear. He said that rebellion is the spirit of witchcraft. You know, and I don't know about you, but I look at some of these ladies, some of those that I've named, and if there's a good term that describes them, the word witch certainly would fit pretty well. Why? Because they have the spirit of rebellion, which is the spirit of witchcraft. Rather than chaste, you wouldn't look at those ladies and say they're chaste. You'd say they're crass. Rather than respectful, in most cases when you see them on TV or on the news, they're rude. Rather than possessing inward beauty like Cinderella did, they more resemble Drizella and Anastasia, Cinderella's ugly stepsisters. You know, in their Walt Disney book, I don't know how many times we've had to read it for my daughter, but I remember it as I thought about that as an illustration. I thought about the statement that was made about Anastasia and Drizella. In the Walt Disney book of Cinderella, it said, quote, "Although these two girls could have been pretty, they were so bad-tempered, cruel, and spiteful that they always looked ugly," end quote. You know, there's a lot of plain-looking women out there, but because of their inward beauty, they're actually beautiful. But there's a lot of women who could be beautiful, but because of their inward ugliness, they're actually ugly. I think you all know that to be the case. You know, we also can see that rather than being gentle, they're normally coarse and hard. Gloria Steinem said, quote, "Some of us are becoming the men we wanted to marry," end quote. And rather than quiet, they're usually loud and abrasive. Now, if you listen to Pat Schroeder very long, and you'll fast realize that there really is something to the song "Silence is Beautiful." And maybe I shouldn't just pick on Pat Schroeder, but there's a lot of them out there like that. Now, ladies, I ask you, would you prefer to be known for rebelliousness, crassness, rudeness, inner ugliness, coarseness, harshness, loudness, and abrasiveness, or that of being submissive, chaste, respectful, possessing inward beauty, gentleness, and quietness? It's your choice. Choose to emulate the women of now and of the ERA fame, or look to Sarah, as we were told to do in Isaiah chapter 51. Choose Sarah, and it might be said of you, as it was of Sarah in Genesis 21, where it says, "Then Yahweh took note of Sarah." You know, I can't think of anything that could be better said about another woman is to say, "And Yahweh took note of her." Emulate Sarah, and you may have a chance at that. This message is in honor of those of you who can truly be called daughters of Sarah. Not because of physical descent only, but because you are wives and mothers who first belong to Yahshua the Christ, who are submissive, chaste, respectful, inwardly beautiful, gentle, and quiet. You know, I thank God this morning that I have a wife, the mother of my children, who fits all of that. May you continue to follow Sarah as your example and your pattern, and may you too be a shining example for the women of the 20th and 21st.